We are now live and on the air.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I am opening the informational meeting for the Joint Interim Task Force on Testing of Sexual Assault Kits, Forensic Evidence Kits. So with that, how about we'll go around the room and identify ourselves. And Captain, if you'll start, please.
My name is Alex Gardner. I'm a captain with the Oregon State Police.
Patty Kenyon. I'm a SANE nurse.
George Burke, Deputy Chief.
City of Salem.
Ron Underhill, District Attorney in Multnomah County.
Shannon Newell. I'm staff to the Judiciary Committee and this task force.
And Representative Carl Peluso, representing the state of Oregon and the city of Gresham. And happy to have everyone here today. So we're going to start out. Oh yeah. Anybody on the phone for us?
I'm on the phone.
And who are you? I'm
sorry. This is Danielle Tudor.
Oh, hey Danielle, good to hear from you.
Yes.
Which direction are we heading right now?
Certainly, Chair Peluso, members of the task force. Today we are here to talk about two important topics from Captain Gardner, who is going to tell us about the status of the Safe Kit backlog, as well as discussing the upcoming OSP multidisciplinary team and the tracking system and how we might work around that. Do you want to present from here or down here? Or?
Whatever is most convenient.
If I could just interrupt for 1 second, I'd like to introduce my staff, that Zoe Klingman is here with us as well. And then, Captain, thank you.
Oh, certainly. Well, Chair Peluso and members of the committee, it's nice to be the bearer of good news. It's probably easier for you to refer to the charts that you have in front of you. And we tried to compress the data and present it in a readable form, and I'm not sure we were successful, but we couldn't find a better way to do it. So the way to read this chart that you're looking at is to start on the top page and basically read top left to bottom right. So in the top left corner, you have the second quarter of 2016, and what we're trying to show is how the proportions of the safe kits by age category have changed over time. So in the second quarter of 2016, if you see that red column there, we have very few kits that are more than 9 months old. But then, of course, once Melissa's Law passed, then the flow really started to come in, and you see by the time we get to the last quarter of 2017, we have a very large number in that 271 to 365 day old category. The first surge is basically in the second quarter of 2017. You'll recall there was a second surge when everybody recognized that there was a chunk of work that wasn't covered by Melissa's Law, the older stuff. And the police agencies around the state voluntarily just started sending that. If you look then at the very at the last page, you can see current pending kit age, and you see there's nothing that's really old. The 181 to 270 day segment is very small, and I think most of those are cases that for one reason or another had to be sent through the system a second time, either because reagents were wrong or there was some error that had to be fixed. So basically, almost all of the work is, the vast majority of the work, I should say, is 3 months or less. And then we have a small piece, less than 20%, that's in the 3 to 6 month age range. What's happened during this period of time, I think, as most of you will recall, is we had to change our process because during this window, the FBI changed the rules and went to 20 loci from 13. And then we also had to get new software, so we had some hurdles. Towards the very end of this period, we had a Lean Six Sigma process going on, and many of the people in our system who were staffing that were biology and DNA folks. But some good things have come out of that, and we're continuing to accelerate partly as a result of that. So right now, in a perfect world, if we had no other work pending, if a safe kit came into our lab, it would take about 28 days to get it done. That's about 7 days in biology processing and then 3 weeks roughly in DNA. As a result of the Lean Six Sigma process, we've made some changes, at least we're at the pilot stage, but I think they're likely to stick, where we've shortened the biology process to only 2 days, 2 to 3 days instead of seven. So that makes still the best case scenario just a little bit over 3 weeks of actual processing time. So the lab doesn't really function at its best if we don't have some work pending in the wings, because we don't ever want to get to the point where we have biologists with no work in the pipeline. So I would say that we're fairly close right now to being optimized. Looking forward, we're going to be starting to reintegrate some of the property crime work, which is very important to law enforcement partners and the community. And that's going to be incremental until we see how the system can manage the additional volume. As you know, the total volume of property felonies in Oregon is much larger than the number of person felonies in Oregon. So we can only take little bites of that at a time and see how the system will work. It's clear that we're not going to have enough capacity to work all the property felony crimes, but we might be able to manage a significant chunk of them. So the next question for us is the tracking piece under House Bill 4049 from the last session. And just as a quick review of the timetable, after 1571 was passed and we looked at the amount of personnel that would be required to maintain that interface with victims so that they had ready access to where their kits were in the system, we realized that an electronic solution of some kind was going to be the better way to manage it. So we applied in 2016 for a grant. We got the grant, a federal grant, for a little over $1 million that fall. The money became spendable in January of 2017. The problem is that because about two-thirds of that grant was for software, and we now have the stage gate process in Oregon as a result of the Cover Oregon failure, getting through that process with DAS was unmanageable for us. DAS has a requires, in addition to the grant application, which basically states the purposes of the program, how it's going to be implemented, and includes all the normal federal auditing of the program. DAS requires a business plan. And it was clear, if we had gotten through that process, we got to the draft plan stage, but if we had gotten all the way through that process, because the purchase price of the software was over OSP's $150,000 limit, all making it through that process did for us was put us in the DAS procurement line, which was then going to take more months. So by the time we were, say, a year or more into all that, we realized we weren't likely to be successful until close to the end of the grant period. So we looked to Portland Police Bureau and the folks who put on that great presentation for us, and I can't say enough good stuff about the Portland Police Bureau team. They have been absolutely fantastic, and we've been working with them for about a year to get a version of their SAMS program that is victim-centric, app-driven, and the status today is it's been in the beta testing for months, and it looks like it's working great. So it'll be completely anonymous. It's basically the victim will have a number and be able to put that number into the phone, and it will tell where the case is in the process from initial collection at a medical facility all the way through to the end. And we can make that number available to whomever, law enforcement agencies, the nurse practitioners, whoever is involved in the case, and they don't have to have any communication. There's nothing in that database that would make the victim vulnerable. So even if the thing got compromised, there's nothing in the system that that identifies, that associates the victim with the number. So we hope that it sounds like Portland Police Bureau has pretty consistently met or exceeded the targets. Their IT team is first class, and they hope to have this rolled out in the first quarter of 2019. Based on what we've seen so far, I think it may be better than that, but that's the target. So House Bill 4049, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it requires a number of things, and I'll just quickly read through them like a punch list. It says the Department of State Police shall establish a multidisciplinary committee on the tracking of sexual assault kits. The membership that's specified for that team is essentially the membership that we have here. And this task force has already been extended, so it seems like a great fit because everybody is already up to speed. Develop recommendations for establishing a statewide electronic assault kit tracking system. Identify and pursue state and federal funding. Be composed of members that include us, basically. Monitor the tracking system's implementation for at least 2 years. Record the status of sexual assault forensic evidence kits from collection site through the criminal justice process, which is where we are, which is the way it's been designed. And the balance of the responsibilities are basically OSPs, reporting and so on. So this is in a sense, the perfect law from the standpoint of the state police, because we'd already done about 90% of what's required. But I would love it if the members of this task force would be willing to serve as an oversight body and a sounding board and a steering committee as we finish up the last of the process. And that's all I have, unless there are questions.
How is this different than the Washington State tracking system?
This one's homegrown. I think the Washington system uses the software that we originally hoped to buy, but I think that what Portland Police Bureau has been able to build is ideal. So, and it's free.
Because free is good.
free is a price that nobody could object to.
And I do recall, I guess, last time we were together, that Portland was working on that for us, and it's great to hear the results that have come this way. And I think it would be foolish for us not to be a part of the continuation of this process. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I think that's great that the state is utilizing the SAM system. I can tell you, having a little historical perspective on how that whole thing was developed, you're absolutely spot on. The IT folks at Portland have been very responsive to fulfilling the needs. As you guys know, Portland held the majority of the kits that hadn't been tested, and they were looking for ways to resolve that issue. And their IT department didn't. And the chief at the time didn't balk at all when we said we needed to spend $100,000 to develop this system. And the work that was done, I think really paid off well. That system's been implemented and put in many systems across the country now. And I can tell you right now, Salem, we're in the middle of implementation of SAMS with the Salem Police Department. So we should be going and we should be doing the install here probably in January of 2019. So we're all trying really, we're fulfilling the obligations, Senate Bill 1571. We're in the midst of making sure we have a tracking system for everybody. We're having lines established so everybody has one person to call to find out what the status is of their kits. This is the first I've heard about the anonymous portion and the app, which I think is absolutely spectacular. It gives people one stop, one place to go to really, they stay anonymous. It's non-intrusive, and it gives people the information they really deserve to have. So I absolutely applaud all that's been done by the state police.
Well, thank you. I have to say sincerely that the Portland Police Bureau has ridden to our rescue, because they don't, the city of Portland and actually Multnomah County too, they don't have the encumbrances that we have in the state system. This simply could not have been done on the state side within this time period. But Portland has just punched through and made it happen. So I'm excited to see it deployed.
Any other comments on this?
Rod Underhill speaking. The captain has raised a kind of a action point for us, and that is a commitment to continue to participate. And so to the extent it needs a second or there's protocols surrounding that, I think it's a good idea, and I would second it if it's appropriate.
And I have the same question to Chana. How do we make this happen?
Sure. Chair Peluso, members of the task force. So I would structure this so that these multidisciplinary team meetings are meetings of the task force, because if we have more than seven members, I think we have two vacancies right now. So if we have more than seven members present together to discuss topics that relate to this, we may be in violation of the public meeting laws if we haven't properly noticed it. So we would want to make sure that if we were getting the team together to work on this, that it was noticed and it was recorded and we jump through all those proper hoops, so to speak. That said, this is squarely within the charge of the task force itself, and so it would be more than appropriate to structure it so that the multidisciplinary, the tracking system and the multidisciplinary team were the topics of future meetings going forward, if that makes sense. I don't think we need to vote on it. It's at the direction of the chair.
And so we don't have a deadline that we need to meet, that sort of thing?
So we have, within 4049, there is a report, January 1, 2019, from the Department of State Police. There is a report due from this task force on December 1 of this year that I have overlooked. The report would come to me and it would be on recommendations for legislation. As we've made no recommendations for the coming session, I'm not sure that the report is necessary. That is the report from the task force, not the report from OSP. There is a final report from this task force that will be very important, and it is due December 1, 2020, and it's a final report that includes a status update on the implementation of the SafeKit tracking system and recommendations for legislation. That is the final report due from this task force, and I think that is a very important one to have.
Any concerns from anyone? Well, then we say we're doing it? And how officially do I do that? Or
you just announce that we're doing it?
Okay.
Maybe hit your gavel if you want.
And I get to hit the gavel. Well, before I conclude or hit the gavel, again, appreciate all the work that has been done with this task force over now a couple of years. And obviously, good work is paying off. And it would not have happened without the assistance of the Oregon State Police, and certainly how Portland stepped up to be a part of it. And from that perspective as well, I think Portland was really happy to do it. I think it's something that they take great pride in, and you know, I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's sort of the geeky things that kind of can make people very in that type of work very happy. So appreciate the work, and I can just gavel and say we're doing it. So I understand that correctly? Okay. It will happen.
At the direction of the chair.
Oh, yes, at the direction of the chair. It will happen. All righty. So again, thanks. And now do we have other things to do? Any comments, questions, concerns?
Couple questions as we now embark on the next phase of doing just what the captain has summarized. As part of this, is there going to be a need for an ongoing funding framework for the operational aspect, storage, maintenance, you know, just care and feeding, if you will, of the SAM system beyond kind of what is currently budgeted for? Or is it no, everything's covered?
So we have no costs related to the development of the program, there are some data storage costs. And unfortunately, that's something Portland can't do for us. So we have to rely on DAS ETS for the time being. Excuse me. We are extremely hopeful that the state will get Azure up and running, which is the government cloud storage. And it works for every federal agency with long acronyms that you can imagine. So I'm sure it's adequate security for the state of Oregon. If we can get to that, the storage costs will be comparatively low. Our initial estimate from DAS, as you probably know, we're required to have our storage at ETS, the DAS computer storage facility. That's my ignorant layman's description. The original estimate said we were going to need 4 servers, for which we were going to pay approximately $9,000 a piece, after which DAS would charge us approximately $88,000 a biennium for servicing those servers. By comparison, the Azure cloud storage would cost, I think, in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% of that. So that would bring it down to the almost affordable stage. The other piece of our grant was for a person to assist in the interface with victims in case there was some challenge, and to make sure that this rolled out more fluidly. That's grant funded. I think we have that for about a year and a half left. I may not be perfect on that, but the job is posted now for basically a policy analyst type person to do that work. So looking downstream into the next biennium, we'll probably need some help, but it's not a huge number unless obviously a bigger number if we don't get the access to the cloud.
None is occurring to me, so it's not as if I think there are necessarily, but any measurable cost impacts to local jurisdictions in order to front end load? I mean, this process starts somewhere with data entry and participation in, right? The logging in and the assignment of a PIN number, log number, those kinds of processes. They strike me as, I'm going to say, relatively routine on the big, you know, continuum of things, but am I missing something about the cost of local agencies, organizations, cities, governments?
For the larger jurisdictions, I would describe it as negligible. As conceived, they have to scan the sample in, so that would be taking place initially to sort of kick the process off at the medical facility. But scanning is relatively easy. I suspect that the medical facility might have to buy something, but we can scan with our phones now, so I can't imagine that's a significant cost. And thereafter, the sample is just moving through the system, and each time it makes it to a different place, it's scanned in. So it shouldn't be a significant cost anywhere except for in the data storage. And then, you know, significantly downstream, when the program has to be updated, as all programs do, I suspect there'll be some cost there, because while Portland has built it and they have made many modifications to accommodate particular needs, I'm sure they don't intend to be on the hook indefinitely. Their grant money will eventually be exhausted.
Is there any downstream public record related issue or concern? We're going to be aggregating a lot of aggregated interesting data while simultaneously sensitive, and some of it very, very sensitive. If left open to be obtained by inquiry, right? The properly submitted public records request to the right place, right time. Are we anticipating that? Are we seeing it coming potentially? And are we protected? Primarily victims is what I'm thinking of.
Right. I think that merits a second and third look by better minds than mine. But my gut check on it is it's not so much of a concern, because the number that we're storing and the progress notations that we're storing aren't affiliated were associated with the victim. So most of the, they might find that OSP, this case took this long to move to the from the hospital to processed and in storage back at the police agency, but they wouldn't know that that pertained to any particular person or even any particular jurisdiction. It just simply isn't in that system. So this isn't a piece of SAMS that's sort of where access to the program or that this piece of the data is controlled by portals or something. It's literally a separate thing, which only has this unaffiliated, unassociated information in it. So it's significant to the victim or the practitioner who has that particular code number, but we could publish it in the Oregonian and it wouldn't mean anything to anybody. But having said that, I want more people to look at it anyway, because the risks are significant.
I think I don't want to forget this issue. I think it's a significant one. I'd like to kind of challenge us all to revisit as we, at times, sorry, where are we relative to that? Have we had the right sets of eyes on the process to make appropriate recommendations and protections for this sensitive, vulnerable victim class and sensitive data and information?
Absolutely. And at some point, Ed and Susan, who are sort of the yin and yang of the IT team that have put this together, it would be good to have them come and speak to this group, because try as they may, they haven't been able to get me competent to describe the technical stuff on this program.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, and perhaps at our next meeting.
They can also put a model up the last meeting and give us scenarios where they're actually playing it out in our SAMS mini version.
Excellent. Yep. Yeah. All good information, and I think it's very doable for us to make it happen. We want
Great.
To do it the right way, mm-hmm. for sure.
Sure.
So, anything else for the good of the old order?
Well, Chair, just last time you and I saw each other, we were at a event supporting Domestic Violence
yes.
Awareness Month, and I said to you words to the effect of Oregon is among the first as far as a state to include the backlog of safe kits. Our research has shown we appear to be fourth. We missed out on the third by a mere few weeks, but we are the fourth. And maybe still only, there may be only four
sure.
states that have cleared their backlog. If my memory is serving me right, I was looking a little bit for I received some, the review and study, and I had the list of the states, I think the three that were already ahead of us. But despite that, I think we ought to be quite proud of the work that we've done
Definitely.
As a state in really what amounts to about 3 years. We went from a significant backlog around the state, in excess of or right about 5,000, and we have eliminated that backlog. And here we're talking about being once again among the state leaders in not just Melissa's Law and the development of we should never have another backlog. And in addition to that, a much more victim-friendly lens relative to tracking of their personal information that they want to know about relative to the timelines and such that we've just been talking about. And so much so that, I get the honor of talking to a group of national prosecutors here in January about this body of work that we've done, in addition to, I don't want to exaggerate and say we may be the only state, but I'm unaware of any protocols have been developed. We developed in my office protocols surrounding not just interaction with victims, but also a document surrounding the concept was post-conviction related review. If we received a surprise result relative to a safe kit examination of a case that had already been resolved in some way, shape, or form, or some variable that took us in a surprise direction such that possibly an exoneration was appropriate to review and those kinds of things. Now, we didn't run into that, but we had upstream prepared documents and protocols anticipating the possibility of that occurring.
And so many of the, I'll just summarize by saying foundational work that we put together along the lines of doing it right, like you just said moments ago, I think are being perceived not just by us as having built a doing it right type system, but others now. And so they want to hear prosecutors from around the country down in Tucson here in January have asked me to convene and join and talk about our experiences and our planning and preparation and then accomplishment. We ought to be proud.
I agree we should be proud, and perhaps at one of these meetings we're going to ask for a report back from you on how that that just worked for us. So
yeah, glad to.
Again, anything else? Danielle, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am. I am still here in Oklahoma.
Okay. Well, we are about ready to close the meeting. Just wanted to know if you had anything you wanted to add.
You know what? I am extremely proud of where Oregon is right now. I know, you know, from my perspective as a victim, you know, it's probably maybe perhaps been the easiest role to, you know, be able to say, hey, we need to do this. But most of you there sitting at the table right now, you're the ones that actually made it happen. And we wouldn't be where we are today if you guys had not stepped up and said, we're going to do this. And so I am extremely, extremely grateful. Not emphasize that enough, because my experience here in Oklahoma is vastly different from my experience there in Oregon. My question to you, Rod Underhill, is, I do happen to know if any prosecutors from Oklahoma are going to that conference in Tucson.
Sitting here right now, I don't, Danielle, but let me pay attention to whether I do see somebody from Oklahoma coming, and I'll make a point of both letting you know and chatting with them myself about our experience and maybe do introductions if we can, right?
That would be absolutely incredible. I would appreciate that very much.
Okay, I'll keep my eye out.
All right, then.
I'm good.
So, you know, it's we're coming to the holidays, so wish everybody good holidays and health in the coming year. And I'm Will Gavel us out.